With all the changes going on in college athletics, you need someone who can keep you up to speed. And that's where we come in.
How do you think it went? I got him on the 1 yard line.
English, please. You know, I don't know baseball.
We are the Roar, where every day is game day.
Final hour of the program here on a Monday with Faxon and Mike V. We're talking college football, and folks, the season feels like it's right around the corner. It's going to be a long month and a half to get to August 30th and that big noon kickoff between Ohio State and Texas, and I think that's when it'll officially hit me, when it's back, or maybe with Tiger pregame and Tiger tailgate show rolling up on game day for Clemson. We'll see, but definitely super excited for this upcoming college football season. If you'd like to discuss, it's going to be a college football-centric hour number three of the program as well, 654-ROAR. Engagement's been great. We'd love to hear from you and have you contribute to the program. Little Wimbledon update before we hop back into the Texas stuff. Djokovic has got set point on DeMenor, and it's currently an insane rally between the two on set point, and looks like Noel is about to take it at the net, and Noel has taken set three. So Djokovic bounces back with back-to-back set wins, 6-4, 6-4, after dropping the first set 1-6 to DeMenor, and the Australian is officially on the ropes as Noel is rallying, even with his old age, man. I mean, this guy is just unbelievably impressive with his longevity and continuing to be such a freak of nature in the return game, even given his age and physical wear and tear. So shout out to Noel, man. Definitely has a goat case for certain. All right, let's hop back into the college football talk and the Texas talk. Texter gets in and says, Arch reminds me of Tebow. There was a lot of unknown, although he had his moments in 06. Huge expectations, excelled them. Will Manning, we will see. To be honest, like, this is the most captivated I have borderline ever been by a prospect, just due to the sheer unknown of the situation, if that makes sense. There is so much unknown related to Arch Manning. We don't have data points. We don't have an extended sample size. We hardly have anything right now to go off of other than, you know, what we've seen against UL Monroe and a couple snaps against Georgia, right? And getting thrown in against Mississippi State, right? But we haven't seen this guy against the upper echelon competition in college football. And for me personally, I just don't know what to make of it. I don't know what to make of him as a prospect because I don't have an extended enough sample size. And to be honest with you, Mike, I will go ahead and say, I think the talk about this guy, you know, being, I think the talk about this guy being like the number one quarterback in the country is ludicrous, dude. I think it's absolutely bonkers, out of your mind ludicrous, to put him over a Nussmeier, a Klubnik, a Sellers.
Come on, Faxon. I mean, look at it. 2024, he averaged 4.3 yards per carry. He averaged 10.4 yards per passing completion. Come on, those are great numbers.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be the crux of the argument for the people that are pro-Arch.
Can you see a little tongue-in-cheek
there?
Oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah. I see the tongue-in-cheek, Mike V. Very savvy, as always, from you over there. But, no, listen, I wholeheartedly hear your points, Mike, and I think that there's validity to them. Like, there are people that are pushing agendas based off of the statistics of last season, and there are people that are pushing agendas for other reasons that I guess are just kind of unknown to me at this point. But what I will say on Arch before we shift gears, we're going to know very quick. We are going to know very, very quick into the upcoming season if this kid is built for it or not. And I'm not trying to put pressure or anything along those lines. I think it's going to be blatantly obvious, like very, very early, as to whether he is cut for it or not. And I'm excited. I'm a little bit giddy to watch him play because I don't necessarily remember the last time we had hype like this, if that makes sense, behind a player in college football. And especially when you draw the last name Manning, right? You have that last name that's on the back of your jersey. That's going to come with these inherent expectations and hype and pedigree and all of those good buzzwords that we like to use about the status level in college football. So let's see. We're going to know at big noon kickoff against Ohio State, folks. We're continuing to go through this article about the explosive offenses in college football. I'm kind of giving my way too early takes on a lot of these guys. I'm going to skip a couple teams because there's a team that I find really interesting considering recent news that has just broke as of this morning with Oklahoma. Mike, have you seen this breaking news that's come across our desk during this time segment, which we've been getting more of recently? Have you seen the Oklahoma breaking news?
I missed it. I'm going to look it up right now.
Oklahoma athletic director will retire from full-time role in the upcoming school year, bringing an end to the longest tenured run for a current AD in a major college sports role. Upon the hiring of a successor, he will stay on as athletic director emeritus. So where we're at right now with Oklahoma is Brent Venables is on the hot seat. Friend of the program, Brent Venables. Obviously, we all believe in BV about as much as you can believe in a guy around here, right? We love the guy. He's a legend. He'll never pay for a beer in this town again. And if somebody tries to make him pay, call me, and I'll call BV. But in all seriousness, this is a make-or-break season for Brent Venables at Oklahoma. And for a guy that was already on just about every hot seat conversation, topic board, list, whatever you want to say in the preseason, right? A new athletic director signifies an increased status level and an increased performance level that is necessary throughout your athletic department. This isn't just a BV thing. When there's a new sheriff in town that you don't have relationships with, when the guy holding the power did not hire you and did not take that chance on you and you didn't go through that process with him, it is a much different dynamic and ball game as a head coach for any sport, right? If I'm at OU right now, even if I'm the women's basketball coach, that's usually who the casualty is when somebody comes in and gets a new job. They fire either the women's basketball coach or they fire the baseball coach. Those are the two popular things when you become athletic director. We're going to send a message if this sport's been underperforming and it's not as big of a rev sport, so it's going to be a mitigated damage if we mess up our first hire, but it's enough of a message to get people talking and show that we mean business. Well, unfortunately for Brent Venables, in the case of Oklahoma, that's such a football-centric athletic department and really always has been, to be candid, I fear that he may be the casualty if Oklahoma underperforms this year. So, Mike, let's walk this out because they are listed in the top six of this list that we're going through about explosive offenses or projected explosive offenses in the upcoming college football season. So my question to you, the audience, and more, what is the bar this year for success at Oklahoma? And what does Brent Venables need to do realistically at OU to retain his job headed into the new regime in Norman with a new athletic department, with a new athletic director that's going to be chomping at the bit to send a message? Because if football underperforms with a new AD coming in and you're already on the hot seat, love BV, but objectively, the writing's on the wall is the way that I view it. So what does he need to do this year to avoid that fate? What does success look like for Oklahoma football now that they're playing in a big boy league in the SEC and they're no longer in the Big 12 where them and Texas can kind of just run it? What does that look like this year for Oklahoma, Mike? Your thoughts?
Some folks may say, well, when you look at Venables at Oklahoma, he's, 22-17. That's an above 500 record. But you kind of have to take that 23 season out when they were 10-3 and realize that their first and third seasons under Brent were 6-7. Now, some folks might say, well, but last year, first year in the SEC, you got to give them a break for that. It's a big new league. It means so much more. But I tell you what, they've got to have drastic improvement this year, especially like you say, with a new athletic director coming in. How long will that leash be for Coach Venables? I'm a huge fan of his. I pull for him every time I see their competitor go up on the screen. This is going to be a big year for them. They've got to do more than just 500. They've got to at least get to a big bowl game, if not really make a stride in the SEC this year.
I agree. And Jed gets in on the Adams Corrific text line saying that Oklahoma and Florida are dark horses to do well in the SEC this year. I'm 2 for 2 with you, brother. I agree on both. I like Lagway. I like Mateer. I like the principles and the foundation offensively at both programs now with the hiring of Arbuckle, the new offensive coordinator in Norman. I think they're in a good position to have some success this year, but let's run through the schedule really quickly, Mike V, if you're cool with it. So you start out with Illinois State at home at Gaylord Family Oklahoma Memorial Stadium in Norman. Win. Michigan. This is a tricky one. What do we think about this matchup against Michigan? Because the way that I view it, warm weather, you know, Michigan's undergone a lot of different changes. That's the best PR spin ever, and they need to hire me in Ann Arbor right now over the last couple years. And there's a lot of unknown right now with Michigan as well, especially at the quarterback position, and they had a completely putrid and terrible offense last year, so we don't necessarily know what to make of them as of right now. What are your thoughts on that game against Michigan week two?
I think, unfortunately, based on last year's results, that's a loss.
Yeah, I get it. Last year, that definitely would have favored Michigan. I think I'm going to take OU in this one. So I'm going to give them a win here. They're at Temple. Weird game to schedule. They should be fine in the Eagles Stadium up in Lincoln Financial. That's cool. Auburn. I'm going to go ahead and characterize this as a must-win game. And that's because of what's up next on the schedule for a team like Oklahoma. So let's say in the hypothetical world they start 4-0, which will really be 5-0 because their first game after the bye week is Kent State, and they stink. Sorry to my guy Alex, who's a big Kent State fan. This is where, oh my gosh, this is where things start to get difficult, Mike. Are you looking at the same thing on your computer that I'm looking at right now?
I'm afraid so.
So this is the four-game stretch from October 11th to November 1st for Brent Venables in Oklahoma. Texas at South Carolina, Ole Miss at Tennessee. So you're probably like, dang, that's four really tough games in a row, Faxon. Who they got up next? They can coast at the end of the season a little bit, right? Oh, no, no, no. No, 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 no. Open date, okay? Alabama on the road. Missouri and LSU. Are you kidding me with those last eight games? I'll walk you through that again, folks, or last seven games, rather. Oklahoma's last seven games are Texas, at South Carolina, Ole Miss, at Tennessee, at Alabama, Mizzou, LSU. I think there's a pretty good chance that Oklahoma starts 5-0. I think there's a pretty good chance that Oklahoma gets to eight wins this year. And I agree with Jed's text wholeheartedly that I think Oklahoma and Florida are two of the more under-the-radar teams to watch in the SEC this year. But to say that Oklahoma could get to the college football playoff would require four or five wins out of those seven games. And without proof of concept on the offensive side of the football, even with some of the defensive growth and our anticipation that they're going to be much better this year offensively with Arbuckle and Mateer, I don't know if I'm comfortable enough getting them to 9 or 10 wins right now. I think I'm 8-4 on Oklahoma to date. And I think they're going to be one of those first teams left out of the playoff that are like 15, 16, 17, or 18. That's where I'm at. And that furthers my point because I don't know if that's constituting of a firing. Like, I think that is the most weird in-between area for the status level of Brent Venables and his job right now in Norman as the head coach. Because we talk about gauging success, right? We talk about what success looks like, new AD coming in, new sheriff in town, you're already on the hot seat, you're in a new league, you need to take strides in the right direction in the immediate future if you want to maintain that position as head coach at Oklahoma. Is 8-4 good enough, Mike Vaughn?
That's what I was about to say. I think it takes at least an 8-4, but then that says if they start 5-0, then they've got to beat a Texas in the Red River rivalry. They've got to go to South Carolina and win there. They've got to win on the road at Tennessee, at Alabama. I mean, you got to get four or five out of those. Whew, that's a tough stretch right there. That's as tough as anybody in college football this year.
It is. It's definitely a murderer's row of a seven-game stretch for those Oklahoma Sooners. Gray from Traveler's Rest gets in. Hey, we appreciate you checking in, Gray. He says, devil's advocate on Oklahoma. They've been extremely vocally, explicitly, and financially committed to Brent Venables, uniquely so, even this year with a new AD. I think he's safe. If you see the recent extension, I think it seems like it makes sense that he'd be on the hot seat. But listening to Oklahoma, they're all in on BV in a way we can celebrate at Clemson. Just don't think people see it as all. Hey, I appreciate you checking in with us, Gray. And that's a unique perspective on the situation. Overall, I tend to kind of agree with you from the standpoint of they have like doubled, tripled down, and dug their heels in on BV being the guy in Norman. I will say that. You're 100% correct with your assessment on that. But that doesn't mean that BV isn't on the top charts of every hot seat list, and he's got the best odds right now to be replaced as a head coach, right? And those things don't matter a ton, but when there's smoke, there's fire when it comes to the hot seat. And there's an immense amount of smoke with Brent Venables right now, to the tune of, like, the most smoke in the country borderline. So, I don't know. To be honest, I don't know what I make of this. And I want to walk this into the upcoming segment because we got Delvin on the phone lines hanging out. And I want to talk some Clemson football as well because we had some texts about the defense. Another texter getting in saying that's a 7-5 year, man. Another texter saying in and said it would be okay if Oklahoma didn't win another game. Yeah, I'm cool with that as well. But in all seriousness, I don't know what success looks like for Oklahoma this year. We've walked this out. We've taken into account the context and the factors and the new athletic director and what the previous years have looked like in this regime. We've talked about the conference switch. I don't know if 8-4 is enough. And I think if gun to head right now, that would be where I'm at on Oklahoma, is 8-4. So at that point, the conversation amongst the new athletic director and whoever he chooses to be his, you know, supporting cast in that role will be, is this thing going in the right direction? Can we build off of this with Arbuckle? Is this offensive philosophy change legitimate? And can we contend for college football playoffs in the future? Or is it time to cut ties? Real quick, before we take a break, Spectrum Paint is where you need to go. It's your independent and locally owned paint source with locations in Clemson, Greenville, Spartanburg, and Landrum. You can shop the widest array of brands at Spectrum Paint, including Benjamin Moore Paints, Pittsburgh Paints, Graco, Ready Seal, Renner Wood Coatings, and more. Projects large and small, whether professional or DIY, folks, you're going to want to go with Spectrum Paint. They have coating, supplies, and expertise to take care of you. Visit them online at spectrumpaint.com to find the location nearest to you or connect with their local sales team. That's spectrumpaint.com. Quick break here in the final hour of the program. I want to walk out a couple more things on Oklahoma football in the upcoming segment, and then I want to start previewing the Clemson defense, which Delvin wants to get in on, and we've had a couple of texts as well saying, hey, you did a breakdown on the offense. Can we get the defense? Stick with us through the break, and we got you on the other side. I promise.
I'm a donut nut. I'm a donut nut. I'm a nut for Krispy Kreme.
I'm Glenn Reese with Krispy Kreme Donuts in Anderson and Spartanburg. We're open 7 days a week. Pick up some delicious donuts and a cup of coffee. We'll help you raise money for your club, church, or group of worthy cause. Sell Krispy Kreme donuts. Call Spartanburg and Anderson Krispy Kremes.
I'm a donut nut. I'm a donut nut. I'm a nut for Krispy Kreme.
If you are a realtor in the upstate of South Carolina, I want to help you close more deals. And here's how I can do that. I'm Mike. I'm the owner of One Tom Plumber, and we are already working with realtors in your area doing the same exact thing. We're the go-to plumbing crew for realtors all across the state of South Carolina because we provide a free same-day quote based on your home inspection report.
Just dial the number one, then Tom Plumber. That's their name. That's their number.
Call the plumber whose name is his number one, Tom Plumber.
It's boating season, and Eclipse Marine Seneca and Clemson Marina can help you find the boat of your dreams. Shop top brands including Veranda, Crestliner, Lund, Bayliner, Pinecraft, and more at Eclipse Marine Seneca and Clemson Marina. Whether you're looking to buy or rent a boat or service your boat by certified Yamaha technicians, Clemson Marina can get you on the water. Don't let the summer pass you by. Visit Eclipse Marine Seneca or Clemson Marina to explore new and pre-owned boats. Take out a rental or service your boat with certified Yamaha technicians.
All right, huddle up, guys. Hey, are you hurt? Better send in the special team. Trammell and Mills, get in there. I call them the local law firm because they're local lawyers, not just a bunch of talking heads. And they know how to win. When one of you gets injured at work or wrecked in a pileup, Trammell and Mills are fighting for you. Okay, call that number.
485-8585. Hut, hut.
That's the right call. Trammell and Mills, local lawyers that know how to play the insurance game.
Spring is a time of growth, but it can also reveal hidden problems beneath your home. Call Canty Foundation Specialist for a free inspection of the cracks in your walls, uneven floors, and sticking doors. These are signs you shouldn't ignore. Canty provides expert solutions to protect your home. Visit CantyCanFixIt.com or call 864-403-5263. Canty Foundation Specialists.
Canty Can Fix It.
Don't miss out on this week's specials at Buff City Soap.
With products for everyone, corporate gifts, pet products, laundry, soap, seasonal scents, and more. Follow Buff City Soap Clemson and Buff City Soap Greenville on Facebook and Instagram for the latest sales and updates.
Live and local sports talk coming to you from the Upcountry Fiber Studios.
This is 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar.
Serving the five counties of the South Carolina Upstate, Upcountry Fiber is a stronger connection.
The only place for sports talk of the Upstate is right here, every day. We are The Roar, where every day is game day.
Final hour of the program continues on a Monday. It's good to be back after the long 4th of July weekend. Excited to be talking college football. Excited to be talking Clemson football. Appreciate everybody getting in with us on the phone lines and the Adams Co-Roofing text line at 654-ROAR. All right. Some closing thoughts on Oklahoma. I just think that my opinion overall is that I'm really freaking excited to watch this team play. And I know that that probably sounds crazy after what we all walked out in the last segment, but let me sell you on this little, like, if I had to be in the camp of somebody that is banging the drum for Oklahoma to be a good team this year, okay, and win 9-10 games, go to the playoff, BV, lives up to the extent, whatever you want to say, okay? I look at Arbuckle coming in as my OC, and I'm in love with what he did at Wazoo. Phenomenal offensive coordinator, phenomenal play caller. He's got a great repertoire with John Mateer. And John Mateer is a guy that's had his praises sung by a guy like Cam Ward, who said he's just as hard of a worker as Cam Ward is. They're really good friends to this day. Cam Ward kind of took him under his wing. Regardless of what your opinions are on Cam Ward, having the number one pick in the NFL draft as your mentor is undeniably a positive thing for Mateer. And with the leadership traits that we've seen with Cam Ward, not only at Washington State, not only at Incarnate Word, not only at Miami, but now with the Titans in his early career, I think that's a good guy to embody for who what you want your quarterback to look like as well. Again, let's remove the bowl game crap from all this. Nobody cares about the Pop-Tart Bowl. Cam Ward was phenomenal last season. Remember Jaden Ott from Cal? The superstar running back that had a really down year this year because he was dealing with some injuries? Yeah, well, he's playing for Oklahoma now. And then you look on the outside, and all of those wide receivers that were hurt last year, most of them are back healthy, including Deion Burks, who's one of the best in the land. You pick up a guy out of the transfer portal from Arkansas Pine Bluff in Javonte Gibson, who's anticipated to be a contributor. You pick a guy up from McNeese and Jermichael Carter, who's expected to be a contributor. You pick a guy up as well in the portal from Arkansas, who had 500 yards last year, in Isaiah Satanga. You look at the O-line. Redshirt senior at right tackle, redshirt senior at right guard, redshirt senior at center, senior at left guard, redshirt sophomore at left tackle. Some of the top recruits in the country behind those guys in the depth spots. You have experience on your offensive line. You're shaping up to have a good one. Defensively, you're returning an immense amount of your production from last year on what was a good, not great unit. And the thing we know about Brent Venables and his defense is they typically get better with time. I see the vision here, folks. I do. And I'm really rooting hard. I am for BV and the Sooners this year because I want my guy to keep his job, obviously. But I think I'm starting to kind of talk myself into this in real time, Mike V, to be honest with you. Like, I really do see the foundation. I see the blueprint. I think the schedule is extremely, extremely daunting. Don't get it twisted. And I don't think they're going to go gangbusters and win 10, 11 games. But could you convince me OU gets to 9-3 and maybe backdoors in the extended playoff? I think I could be talked into it as of right now.
That's a stretch. It's going to be very tough, especially if they drop one of the early ones. It's going to be really tough.
I was going to say, that's contingent on starting your season 5-0 against Illinois State, Michigan, Temple, Auburn, and Kent State. If they start 5-0, then all they have to do is play 4-3 football over the remaining seven, which I think they're capable of doing. But against that schedule, that's a lot easier said than done. Let's shift gears. Let's talk some Clemson football, and we're going to gear this more towards the defense as Delvin's checking in on the phone lines. Delvin, what's going on, brother? How we doing?
Doing good. What's up, Fett?
Doing well, man. Doing well. Very blessed. Excited to be back in the chair after a long weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, before we talk about defense, I think we talk about offense. That's one thing we keep missing. You talk about Brown coming back. What about Cole Turner?
Yeah, I mean, Cole Turner's definitely going to be a guy that's kind of in the picture. But to be honest with you, Delvin, like, just with my personal evaluation and opinion on this wide receiver room to date, I think there's a top five, and then I think there's a pretty clear drop-off after those top five. And I, no offense and nothing personal, but I would include Cole Turner in that drop-off. Now, I do think that Cole Turner has a value and a role to this football team that we started to see more towards the tail end of last season, where I think Garrett Riley did a lot better job of accentuating his strengths and his skill sets, which are quickness, agility, getting the ball in the open field, laterally, horizontally, jet sweeps, drag routes. The goal is to get the guy in space because he's got burners, right, and he can run. And I think that there were some positive moments for Cole Turner last year, right? Like, I think it might have been Stanford where he had that crazy contested catch in the end zone for the touchdown. There have been some positives, like the North Carolina game throughout the course of his career. But, like, Antonio Williams, Brian Wesco, TJ Moore are all playing in the NFL one day and starting in the NFL one day. And Tyler Brown and Tristan Smith have a much better chance of playing in the NFL than Cole Turner does. So, like, it's not necessarily anything against Cole Turner as much as it is buying stock in the remainder of the wide receiver room. I think there's a little bit of a gap in talent there. No offense to Cole.
Yeah. Now, how much do you think that T.J. Parker and Peter Wills thank Dabo for going to Portland and get well help? I think it's going to be the key to the defense for
Yeah, we appreciate you checking in, Delvin. We were losing you a little bit. If you've got anything else to add, go ahead and chime in. On the TJ Parker and Peter Woods thing, and we're going to talk about PJ Hall because he's playing summer league with the Hornets. I do have that in the bank, Jed. I didn't forget about you. We're going to get to that in the final segment. I think Clemson's got the best defensive line in college football. I don't really know what else to say other than that, to be candid. I mean, I look at TJ Parker and I look at a shoe-in top 10 pick. A monster off the edge that brings all of the physical traits and everything. Like, we use the term looks the part. Go turn on the tape, dude. Like, if you need me to tell you that TJ Parker's a top 10 player in the country, go turn on the tape. Same can be said about Peter Woods, who's actually playing his correct position now. And a large part of that is because you picked up Will Helt, who was on the outside. So I'm extremely excited about the makings of this defensive line headed into the upcoming season. I think the addition of Will Helt is a very, very valuable one because of the pressure it takes off of TJ Parker. He's going to see less double teams as a result. You can bump Peter Woods back inside, and then you've got DeMonte Capehart, who I think is an NFL-caliber player as well, adjacent to Peter Woods at defensive tackle. And that's not even mentioning the depth pieces of a Jaheim Lawson, of a guy, you know, that's in the depths right now in the depth chart, of a Cade Denhoff, right, that can come in as rotational pass rushers for you, or a Darian Mayo, who redshirted last year. And then your DT depth looks elite. I think the forgotten piece of the puzzle here is Vic Beasley, who's going to be healthy for the first time in his career this season. Excited to see him get after it. Amari Adams is the top player in the state. Heaven Brown Shuler and Champ Thompson redshirted. Stephylan Green's a really good player. You have depth at DT. You have two upper echelon edge rushers and a premium edge rusher in TJ Parker. Mike, to be honest with you, I know we're trying to temper expectations to a certain extent. There's no reason that this D-line should not be dominating football games this season against inferior competition. I'm not saying that they're going to go out there and just punch everybody in the mouth all season, because that's not how football works. But against that middle of the slate, against the bottom tier ACC teams that you have on your schedule, these guys should be absolute game wreckers that are dominating football games in a similar fashion to what the Power Rangers were doing back in their heyday. Your thoughts?
Faxon, it's time for two words, and that's all I've got to say. When it comes to the defensive line, Pee-woo, let's go.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. I'm ready. I'm ready to see him really come into form this year. Obviously, he's got great stats so far in his time at Clemson. I think this is going to be a massive year for Peter Woods.
I think this is going to be a massive year for Pee-woo as well, and I'll just go ahead and call my shot. I think TJ Parker and Peter Woods not only just go in the top 10, I think TJ Parker and Peter Woods both go in the top 5, folks. That's where I'm at right now. And a lot of this, and you can say orange-tinted glasses, I don't really care, to be honest with you. I trust my evaluations when it comes to these guys. I had the same opinion on them last year when Clemson wasn't a great football team that lost 4 games, right? They were a good, not great football team last year. Peter Woods and TJ Parker both have God-given physical traits that can't be taught, and that is a part of why I am so high on them as prospects. You can't teach or feed or give enough milk to a baby to produce a Peter Woods. You can't, like, Peter Woods looks like he was created in a lab from a size, stature, wingspan, weight, move. There is no reason a 315-pound man should be able to be as mobile as Peter Woods is. That is a transcendent ability for him with his versatility amongst the defensive line. And the same can be said about T.J. Parker, who fits the prototype of what you want in your modern NFL edge. He's 265. He's freaking huge. And he wants to cut your quarterback's throat off every time he sees him. It's exactly what you want in your defensive lineman. So I'm in love with the Clemson defensive line. That's not to be said that the defense doesn't have flaws and Tom Allen doesn't have his work cut out for him at specific positions. So that transitions us to the secondary, which I think is the biggest concern to date for this Clemson football team. A lot of people are really high on the corners. I'm high on Avion Terrell. I think he's a really good player. I'm high on Ashton Hampton. I think he's a really good player. If I have to interject with some concern, Avion Terrell is only 5'10". And I understand that that has been something that hasn't necessarily hurt him in the past. Ashton Hampton is 6'2", adjacent to him. But I think there are a couple things to account for here in the secondary at corner and safety. Your number one corner being 5'10 and being pass interference prone, albeit a great player, is a little alarming to some degree. I think Avion Terrell has a chance to be a first-round pick. I think he has just a chance to be, you know, almost as good as Big Bro, right, in AJ. I think he's a really good college football player. There's going to be teams that have 6'4", 6'5", big-body receivers. And yes, to date in his career, Avion has played much larger than his 5'10 stature. But again, we can't just be all positivity here. We do have to bring up, you know, concerns and criticisms with this football team. I don't love my number one corner being 5'10". Ashton Hampton. This will be his first year holding that starting role and starting level experience. Yes, he started at times last year. It's different transitioning to that within the offseason and the expectations that come with that, especially on a team that's a projected top five team in the land like Clemson. You look at the depth at cornerback. I like Jaden Lucas a lot. I think he can be a Swiss Army knife that can line up at a plethora of positions. But behind him, I don't love your corner depth of Brandon Strozier and Corian Gibson because we haven't seen a ton of those guys. And that has been the most scrutinized position by Dabo over the last couple of seasons, as you guys have heard extensively, is the young corners need to play better and they're not ready. So if they've continued to grow and make strides, which I'm sure they have over the course of this offseason, and again, we'll know pretty quickly, then I feel confident about this group. But if the depth concerns from the past couple years are still prevalent, in combination with Hampton being a first-year starter and Terrell being 5'10", again, we're nitpicking, but that would be a little bit of a concern. And then you take some of those similar points into the secondary with Ricardo Jones, who's your projected starting free safety as a true sophomore, no starting experience. Kylan Griffin, your projected strong safety, redshirt junior, limited starting experience. I think this is your weakest safety room in probably the last 5-6 years. It's not anything against those guys, but you just got to look at some of the talent Clemson's had at safety. Like, Clemson's been loaded at safety for ages, folks. We've been very, very spoiled with Simmons to Mickens to all the great players that have rolled through this institution over the years. So, again, people ask me to break down the defense. We're going to talk scheme and Tom Allen and what's different real quick here in a second. But from a player personnel standpoint, I feel great at linebacker with Sammy Brown, Wade Woodass, Jeremiah Alexander, Jamal Anderson, Kobe McLeod, D. Creighton, Drew Woodass. Feel great there. I am higher on the linebacker depth than most. I feel phenomenal about the defensive line. Think it's one of the best units, if not the best unit in the country. I think your DT depth is the best in the country. And you have two premier players that I project go in the top 5 or 10 in the NFL draft. But if there's a concern with this team, it would be the secondary. I like Khalil Barnes a lot at nickel. I think Shelton Lewis can potentially, you know, pay some dividends. I like his game. Atlanta kid, he's a dog, right? But at the end of the day, if there is a weakness, Mike V, with his defense, do you think it's fair to characterize that as the secondary out of the three units of D-line, linebacker, and secondary?
I think that's fair, and I think they're going to have more pressure on the outside because the linebacker crew is solid. The defensive line is solid. I think that's going to push teams to want to get outside and try to test these corners and these safeties, just like you've said.
Yeah, for sure. And a texter gets in with a valid point that I actually think I was about to bring this up. D-line improvement automatically makes the secondary better. We use the term coverage sacks, right, Mike? Which is your corners do a complete, unbelievable job of blanketing the guy, and you get like 4 seconds to pin your ears back, get after the quarterback, you get a coverage sack. That's a pretty common term in football. It's going to be the inverse this year for Clemson.
Whereas your D-line is going to be creating, anticipated to, create so much havoc and so much pressure up front on the quarterbacks and opposition's offensive lines that in theory, it should make your D or your secondary significantly better and their lives a lot easier. They don't have to hold on to their coverage as long, right? There's more room for error. There's going to be more chances to make plays on the ball and to break on the ball. So I'm really excited for what these young kids can get after in the secondary this year, especially Hampton, man. Hampton's going to be a star. Avion Terrell is going to be an NFL player one day, but we are nitpicking and we do have to criticize and praise fairly. It's been a very praising program of this Clemson football team to date. There are weaknesses, there are flaws, there are holes, and there are a few reasons to be concerned, as every football team has at this stage in the season. So if we're nitpicking, secondary would be where my primary concern is right now on the defensive side of the ball. Texter gets in and says the impact of Boulware cannot be understated. I think he's a key to our improved defense in the middle of the field. Agree. I love Ben Boulware. We've interviewed him on the show before when I was filling in for Qualk Without a Bounds. I've talked to Ben a lot of times at this point. Ben's a great dude. You know what Ben loves more than anything on planet Earth, Mike Vaughn? Clemson football.
No doubt.
I want that guy in the building with his passion, with his acumen, with his IQ, with the way. And I don't mean anything against Ben by this. And, I think there's probably a decent chance he's listening right now. With the way that Ben was so athletically challenged in comparison to most of his peers, yet was still the most impactful player on the field in the majority of games he played in, you now have guys, again, no insult to Ben, I think he would agree with me, that are significantly more talented and physically gifted than Ben Boulware ever was in your linebacker room. And he can take all of the information base that he has built with his pedigree as a player, national champion, one of the best linebackers in the country, and he can instill that and put guys that are more gifted than he was physically in a position to succeed. Again, mental's a big part of the game. It's a large part of why Boulware was so successful. But I see a guy like Sammy Brown with all of the God-given traits you could want in a linebacker, a guy like Wade Woodaz, who is a huge monster of a linebacker and defensive player. And I think Ben Boulware and Tom Allen and the combination of those two with their intensity, their leadership, and their acumen for the game of football, not only just with the X's and O's, but what it takes to be a great player on the field as a leader as well, I think Clemson's in really good hands on the defensive side of the football this year. And we'll walk it out a little bit more on the other side of a quick break.
Faxon, one thing real quick. When you scroll through this roster on the Clemson website, there's one request that I have, and I know this is not defensive related, but I need for the graphics folks at Clemson football to go ahead and get that Ian Shefflin basketball picture out of the roster. Let's get him in a suit and tie and see what he's going to look like as a true tight end.
Yeah, we got to get Ian on media day. I'll make sure to run that by him and see what we can get arranged for you, Mike V. That's pretty funny. 654-ROAR is the number if you want to check in. In the final segment of the program, we'll have a little mini Wimbledon update as it looks like Demonor is slated to try and take this to five sets against Joker in the round of 16 of Wimbledon, and we'll talk more Clemson football and college football right after this.
Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
Hey guys, let's talk ED, because millions of men experience it, but not everyone can access or afford treatments like Viagra. Well, Hims can help. Through Hims.com, you can get a full range of treatment options for ED, including daily or as-needed meds, through a 100% online process. It all starts with an online intake form. Get started at Hims.com/radio, and from there, a medical provider licensed in your state will determine if ED treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is shipped to you for free. Find the ED treatment that fits your needs, with options up to 95% less than the brand names. Millions of men experience ED. But Hims can help. To start your free online visit and save up to 95%, go to Hims.com/radio. That's Hims.com/radio for your free online visit. Hims.com/radio.
Sitting here again today with our good friend Gary Mahaffey of Insurance for Seniors and Disabled. Gary, listener asked, Walt, I have a small business and wonder if Gary would like to work with our employees who are reaching retirement age, and if so, at what charge?
Great and timely question, listener. We have just launched a new service this year doing exactly what you've asked. We will work with small to medium-sized companies who have people retiring and need our Medicare services. In addition to teaching them the Medicare ropes and how to access Medicare, I will call on my old HR background to support what the employer is doing through their retiree benefits package as well. And again, my charge, as always, is zero.
There you have it, listener. Give Gary a call today at 864-307-8484. Again, 864-307-8484. And as always, you will thank me later.
Contractors, we know what it takes to build something great. Long days, hard work, and the right materials. At Harbin Lumber Company, we're here to make sure you've got everything you need to get the job done. Since 1917, we've been your trusted partner in building dreams, from framing lumber to finished materials. When you work with Harbin, you're not just getting quality supplies, you're getting a team that's got your back. Visit one of our local lumber yards today, and let's build dreams together.
Bojangles just launched the new Breakfast Burrito. Sausage, gravy, eggs, and bow rounds all wrapped in a flour tortilla. But hurry, it's here for a limited time. It's bow time.
This is Walt Deptula inviting you to join me each and every afternoon from 3 to 7 for Road Rage, America's most informative and entertaining sports talk show, where we cover it all. Baseball, basketball, football, hockey, boxing, UFC, bowling, the National Cat Fight League. We don't care what it is, from 3 to 7, we cover it. Join me each and every afternoon. Do not miss an episode of Road Rage.
The only place in the upstate to catch Atlanta Braves games is right here on the Roar.
Fly ball deep right.
Jansen, here's the 0-2.
Got him! Holy smokes!
We're 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar, where every day is game day.
Kick it!
Welcome you back in, ladies and gentlemen. Facts on Sports with Faxon and Mike continues here on the Monday edition of the program. It's the final segment of the program, and if you want to beat the buzzer, 654-ROAR is the number. Rally going back and forth right now in the round of 16 at Wimbledon between Demonor and Joker. And Joker's got the advantage. It's actually his first break point here, trying to get it back to 4-3 as Demonor is trying to hold serve and get this to a set 5. And at this point, this is quite legitimately a 70-plus second rally. I mean, they're just going back and forth and back and forth. So I won't bore you with that. I'll give you an update when somebody just wins the freaking point. But we're talking college football here on the program, and we're talking Clemson football here on the program with much to discuss about the defense specifically. And Noel just got the break, so it looks like he's going to be serving to make it 4-4 and set 4. Texter gets in and says, I think we need to slow down and remember this is Tom Allen's first year with the new team, staff, and overall environment. Did everybody forget how god-awful the defense was last year? Tom Allen's the truth, 386. I really don't know what to say other than that. And I do agree overall, like, with your logic and the general ideology that with the first year of a new coach, a new scheme, a new regime, you need to temper expectations to a certain extent and take things with a grain of salt. I agree from a general perspective. Like, Luke Fickell and Phil Longo a couple years ago, that ended up being oil and water and a freaking disaster up in Madison, Wisconsin, right? And even GR's first year here. Well, Clemson didn't have any receivers. So Cade looked terrible for the most of the year because he was running for his life behind an injured O-line, and the wide receiver room was so injured he had nobody to throw the ball to. So, like, I do understand the thought philosophy behind the hesitation of backing that first-year coach. I get it. I think that's valid. But Tom Allen is not your average first-year coordinator, right? That would be where I would push back a little bit. And what I mean by that is Tom Allen's a guy that possesses 5-plus years of Power 4 head coaching experience. He's had multiple successful stints as a defensive coordinator at a lot of different steps, you know, including Penn State last year, where he conducted the best defense in the country, arguably, at times. It was top five in most the majority of categories, right? Notre Dame and Ohio State were up there as well, and so was Michigan. South Florida, he was a really good defensive coordinator in 2015. He gets the associate head coach defensive coordinator job at Indiana, gets promoted, defensive coordinator linebackers last year at Penn State, one of the best in college football. Was at Arkansas State? Was it Drake? Was it Ole Miss? Successful stints at all of those places. So that would be my pushback. I agree from like a philosophical standpoint with you that we should be taking a grain of salt with the year one coordinator slash coach, but this is not your average coordinator, and it's not every day, Mike Vaughn, that you get a six-year tenured Power 4 head coach in the NIL era, which was recent. Like, this is recent head coaching experience
to come just coordinate one unit of your football team. That's something that's not very common in the coaching world.
I completely agree. I'm so excited about him being here. I'm so excited about the experience that he brings, the tenacity that he brings, the three words of accountability, love, and I'm missing the third one. It was in the video that football put out in the last week or two. But, you know, he's got these guys stepping up to admit when they loaf, when they let the team down. They're holding each other accountable. He's setting the stage for a new way to do Clemson defense, and I think it's phenomenal. I can't wait to see it on the football field.
Yeah, I'm definitely in agreement with you. 654 Roar is the number if you want to tap in. Clemson Brad gets in and says, in the secondary, I think RJ gone is a bit bigger than people realize. What are your thoughts on Griffin? Imagine coming in and inheriting all the talent he is now. He's a kid in a candy store. Spot the ball. Agree on all fronts, Brad. And to be honest with you, I got to watch more tape on Kylan Griffin. I got to do more of an individual player deep dive and profile to give my analysis and my thoughts. You know, in the secondary specifically, I've struggled to a certain degree evaluating and projecting because of the lack of experience of some of the players at safety. But I got to do a deeper dive on some of these, you know, snaps that I wouldn't have been monitoring as closely last season when I was conducting film reviews, right? Like Kylan, I'm sure, played a ton against the Citadel, right? And there have been a couple games in his career that I'm sure I haven't caught from start to finish or hyperfixated on him with the snap share and what he looked like and what his footwork's looking like at the second and third level in coverage and how he's breaking on the football. I think Kylan Griffin's a pretty good player. I think he's a pretty clear downgrade from RJ Mickens, and that doesn't seem like a diss or disrespectful because Mickens was a really, really good player. I think Kylan's got some room to grow, but that's something I'll have to tap back in on you with a little bit later in the offseason when I do a little bit more player-centric breakdowns on that defensive side of the ball with some of the more inexperienced guys that are in the secondary for the Clemson Tigers. All right, Mike, we've done like 2 straight hours of college football, brother. If you listen to my show, I give John the keys to the show in the final segment and kind of let him bounce us around the horn for a plethora of different topics wherever he wants to go. We've had some NBA breaking news. I think we've got we don't have Braves baseball tonight, but we've got Wimbledon. There are a bunch of different directions that we could take this here in the final segment, Mike. So throw a couple topics at me and let's chat. What have you got?
I just like where you were heading a little bit earlier when you mentioned PJ Hall. I love this idea of him getting another opportunity in the NBA, especially when it's so close to home. Excited to see what he can put on the court for the Hornets, and would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yes. So Jed asked us to talk about this briefly a little bit earlier in the program. 654 Roar, if you want to check in on some summer league and some Clemson in the summer league. So let me give a little bit of an update. PJ Hall will be playing for the Charlotte Hornets in the summer league. Chase Hunter is on an Exhibit 10 contract, which has a chance to be converted to a two-way contract, and we were representing the New Orleans Pelicans in the summer league. Victor Lockin has accepted an invite to play for the Oklahoma City Thunder in the summer league. Now, three guys to evaluate, three guys to assess, three guys to break down. Let's start with PJ Hall and the Charlotte Hornets, okay? So PJ was released by the Nuggets, and after signing a two-way contract last year, coming out a little bit, it wasn't early. He could have used the fifth year. He elected to go to the NBA draft. He made his decision. It is what it is. So PJ Hall gets released, and he immediately gets picked up by a local-ish team in the Charlotte Hornets. I would like to say that I think PJ has a chance to play himself into a two-way contract again. And the crux of that argument would be PJ murked the G League last year. And, like, every opportunity he was given. Seriously, he was dogging dudes in the G League last year. We're talking 20 PPG, 49% from the field. He's grabbing 12.5 boards, 2 assists, a steal, and a block. And it's efficient, too. 49% from the field, 35% from 3 on 4 attempts per game, and 83% from the charity stripe. PJ was killing last year in the G League to the point where he actually spent a lot more time than I maybe even originally anticipated on the Denver roster. Now, the issue was that he wasn't getting minutes, and he was getting roadblocked to a certain extent on that Denver roster, as we alluded to. They've got guys in their front court that are well-established. They have veterans. Obviously, Jokic is going to play 40 minutes a night as the best player in the league. They had DeAndre Jordan, who's a veteran who provides a lot of leadership as their backup center. They were still investing in their former picks in Hunter Tyson, funnily enough, and Zeke and Naji. There was just a lot of guys in PJ's way. Now, when I look at Charlotte, I don't see as many guys in PJ's way. I see a Charlotte Hornets team that's moved on from a lot of their big men. I see a Charlotte Hornets team that right now in the current day and age is projected to start a second-round pick in Ryan Kalkbrenner at center. And their other option at center is Musa Diabite. Now, I like both of those players, but I almost think, Mike, that the Nuggets releasing P.J. Hall is almost the best thing that could have happened to him, because I think there is a good chance that he finds a way to stick in Charlotte for a little bit. I don't think P.J. is good enough to be some NBA star player. Let me preface that. Like, P.J. is my boy. Love him to death. But at the end of the day, rotation guy is what his goal probably is in the NBA, and that seems fair and objective. If he can go be a sixth or a seventh man off the bench somewhere, generational wealth and his family set for life. And that's a success in the NBA is to get to that second contract, especially for a guy that's undrafted like PJ, right? So I really like the developmental track for PJ in Charlotte, and I really like his opportunity to potentially vie for a roster spot. But with that being said, you have to play well in the summer league. And that goes for our other two guys to talk about with Clemson men's basketball as well, and Victor Locken, and of course, Chase Hunter. I think Chase Hunter has a really good chance of earning his way into a two-way contract. And again, we mentioned this last week. If you didn't tune into the program, Chase Hunter has inked an Exhibit 10 contract with the New Orleans Pelicans, which essentially means they sign him for camp. They have the option to exercise that into a two-way deal, which would mean Chase is on a two-way and making the half of the league minimum, which is like $600,000, right? It's great money. I think Chase has a good chance of getting that two-way converted, but again, needs to play in the summer league. The one that I'm lowest on the chances of making the roster is Victor Locken. And weirdly enough, I actually think Locken might be the most suited for NBA basketball out of the three from a play style perspective and standpoint. I'm not super high on Locken's ability to make the Thunder roster. Number one, defending NBA champions, right? Like, that creates a really high bar. Number two, first round draft pick invested in a center and Thomas Sorber. Number three, multiple seven-footers already inked for extensions on your books. They just re-upped Jalen Williams for 3 years. They have Chet, who is going to be a Thunder guy for life. Usman Dieng, a lot of people forget about that former first-round pick. Another front-court player that's going to be in the mix. Brandon Carlson, another center that is currently employed on the roster. Isaiah Hartenstein, their starter on the roster. So when I look at PJ and I look at Chase specifically, I think there's a clear and evident path to make the rosters of the teams they will be representing in the summer league. I think there's a good chance PJ lands a two-way with the Hornets. I think there's a good chance Chase lands a two-way with the Pelicans. The method to the madness is going to have to look different for Victor Locken, because I think he's roadblocked in Oklahoma City, and I think when you just read between the lines of them drafting a guy like Sorber, and you read between the lines as well with just the existing 7-foot talent that they have on their roster, Locken's best chance at an NBA roster is going to be getting some on somebody other than the Thunder's radar and sticking on a two-way elsewhere. A little bit of a Wimbledon update. Joker just went Joker mode. Alex de Minaur was up 4-1 in the fourth set, and Joker is about to close him out 6-4. Folks, this is unbelievable. Joker just did it. He just won 13 of 14 points down the stretch, broke de Minaur twice, and won the match to go to the round of 8 in Wimbledon. What a performance by one of the greats, man. I'm not a Noel guy. I'm a Nadal guy. But freaking respect, man. What a great player. What a great athlete. Truly one of the all-time greats. So there's a little bit of a mini Wimbledon update for y'all. But yeah, that's Jed. Sorry to save it for so late in the program. That's my three-pronged breakdown on the Clemson men's basketball guys, where they are in the summer league, the chances to make their roster. I think PJ, if he plays up to standard, has a pretty good chance of being converted into a two-way with the Hornets. I think there's a chance to stick there, and that might have been a blessing to be released by the Nuggets. I think Chase has a good chance of earning that Exhibit 10 onto a two-way for the Pelicans, and I think Lockin's going to have to look elsewhere after the summer league. That doesn't mean that he can't get a two-way. That doesn't mean that he can't make a roster. We see that happen literally all the time. But he's going to have to play well, and his final destination likely is not in Oklahoma City. Mike, any thoughts or commentary to add in the final couple of minutes?
One thing I've got for you that's left here, Faxon. Early on in the show, you asked me about my work with the Spartanburgers this season, their first season at Fifth Third Park in Spartanburg. And I've got a date for your calendar.
Oh, you got
you
a date.
You said you've been wanting to get over to Fifth Third Park. So August the 20th, the Hub City Spartanburgers are hosting Clemson Night. And they're going to take a portion of the proceeds from tickets and donate those to the Clemson Alumni Club in Spartanburg. So I know those folks support scholarships at Clemson, so that'll be big. And you might be thinking, Faxon, well, I'm a Greenville Drive fan. Well, that's a great night for you as well, because the Drive will be traveling over to face the Hub City Spartanburgers. So Clemson Night at Fifth Third Park with the Hub City Spartanburgers and Greenville Drive on August 20th. That'll be a fun evening to all be together.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun evening for sure. I'm going to have to mark that on my. You said August 20th, right? I got you right on that, Mike V?
That's a Wednesday night.
A Wednesday night. Okay. We'll put that on the calendar, and we'll try and get out there to Fifth Third Park. Is that the correct name as well?
Also known as The Fraction.
The Fraction. Okay, interesting. The Fraction. I like that. That's a cool little nickname. 90 seconds remaining in the program. Mike, it's been a blast today. Anything to add before we get out of here? We don't have any Braves baseball tonight. They are off, and we'll pick up with programming once again tomorrow as the Braves kick off a series on the road late night out in Sacramento playing those pesky, I'm going to just call them the Oakland A's until they're no longer officially, the Oakland A's out there in Sacramento this year. It's Didier Fuentes against Jeffrey Springs on Tuesday. We'll have a breakdown for you on tomorrow's program, but anything to add in the final 60 seconds?
A shout out to John Height. Thanks for the opportunity to sit in. Getting a little extended July 4th vacation. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely excited for tomorrow's show. It should be a blast. Excited for the summer league action for the Clemson men's basketball players today. We'll talk a little Clemson men's basketball on the program as well. I'm going to get over to a couple practices this week for men's and women's basketball, and obviously not going to give like a crazy amount of intel, but I know things are starting to come together, and I know things are looking good right now over in men's basketball world. I think there's a large reason to be very, very excited about what this team can bring to the table this year, and I'm really excited to see what Brad Brownell and his crew have got. So we'll definitely talk some men's basketball tomorrow. We'll keep up with the college football discourse as well, and we'll keep you in the loop on how Chase and Victor play tonight, and PJ and their endeavors in the summer league, because I think all three have a chance to make an NBA roster, which is very, very exciting for this program and for those three individuals. Sam Jones, Ben Milstead, up next with Out of Bounds. Sam in all week for Kwok, who's on vacation. See you tomorrow.
WCCP-FM 105.5, Clemson, Greenville, Anderson. WAHT AM 1560, Cowpens. 97.5, Spartanburg. We are the Roar.